Welcome to the PI Podcast, political insights for the palaging inis. I'm your host, Matt Ardonez, and this is another edition of the PI Film Institute. So it's quite special because I wasn't normally planning to do another Film Institute episode after our great episode with Eunice, who talked about film festivals. But recently, I have just, shortly after that recording, I went to my first BLTX Expo. I believe that is Better Living Through Serography, or like Xerox. So it's basically like an expo with small-time printers where a lot of their, you know, independently published books are printed and Xeroxed. And a lot of these interesting, let's just say, rogue voices are not in the mainstream, but they are quite interesting and refreshing. And one book in particular talks also about film and film criticism and the Filipino culture of film viewing. And this is this book I finished in one sitting. It's quite short, but definitely powerful, you know, and definitely, you know, took the words, some words out of my mouth, and certain things that I want to maybe engage with, you know, and but very interesting opinions and voices here about this. So the book here is called Post-Dilawan Cinema and the Pandemic. So this particular edition of the book has a very good blurb from Carolyn Howe, a very prominent social scientist and author, who says this: anger clarifies, anger energizes, read this book and be angry. So it talks a lot about how Philippine cinema has changed, specifically, you know, after the quote-unquote Dilawan regime. So he talks about Dilawan cinema. Dilawan, of course, is the derogatory term for the liberals, or for those people in the Liberal Party. Of course, the cinema after that, which is the cinema of, you know, Duterte and the current cinema right now, which is Viva Max and Daryl Yap. So we're going to talk about that and the author of this book. So, ladies and gentlemen, for the guest for this Film Institute, the visiting fellow of this Film Institute is a film critic author of Post-Dilawan Cinema and the Pandemic, Mr. Epoy Dato. Welcome, Epoy, to the PI Podcast.
Hey, thank you. Thank you, Matt.
Okay, so Epoy, thank you for accepting my invitation. And let me just say, this is a very powerful book and very colorful, definitely angry. But I do want to ask, though, what inspired you to write this book, especially in your preface? It starts, the first three sentences, like, I quit academia. Like, oh, that sets the tone. So tell me, you know, what inspired you to write Post-Dilawan Cinema and the Pandemic?
What inspired me?
Yeah. Is inspired the right word? Or sigur angered you or something? Yeah.
I think so, yeah. I wrote it months after I recovered from COVID-19. That was in October 2021. When I first wrote the first draft. Some of them, if you read the tag dito, yung preface ni Joel David.
Yes.
I mentioned niya yun how some of them are found in earlier pieces of writing that I tried to piece into the whole to make a cohesive thread ng arguments. So I think the earliest paper that I had there from the preface then, same part ng preface. Itong Prolegomenon, I think that was earlier.
Yeah.
Pero that was yung Prolegomenon was an afterthought. Something that I included after I finished. I think the first thing that sets the tone.
Yes.
For everything. Was this encounter.
It's for a theory of movie going. Okay, yeah. So what's that about?
Let's talk about it later.
Kasi parang, sure.
What sets the tone of it, the angry tone,
mm.
the book, is something that happened to me my encounter with the late the recently passed Teddy Ko.
Yeah, rest in
So
peace.
it's something that you might read there
Mm-hmm.
on how he reacted to our panel sa Alternative Cinemas Initiatives Prince, which was organized by Cinemas Incomplete. So we and two of my other comrades from CICAD. CICAD is a cultural organization that I am a part of. So we, sabi natin we advocate, although I really hated using the word.
Sure.
we advocate urban poor rights. So
right.
So most issues come from housing, job security, precarity, and all that. So very pressing nung time na yon was 20, that was 2019, so just October in 2019 when we presented our panel. Kakatapos lang halos nung threads nung demolition sa Sitio San Roque.
Right.
So you're not familiar, the audience hindi familiar kung saan yung Sitio San Roque. It is a
Yes.
community found in the North Triangle near Vertis North. So yun yung katabi ng BFP, yung Bureau of Fire Protection, tapat nung Pisay na
yeah.
community. Yan. So it's been a long, may mahabang history yung San Roque. Especially spearheaded by Kadamay, the Urban Poor Organization,
yes,
of pushing back demolitions doon. And then us bilang cultural group advocating for urban poor rights, syempre we also stand in solidarity whenever those things happen.
Right.
So there was one edition of Cinema Realita, a film festival that we organized. That we organized during the time na merong threat ng demolition doon sa community mismo. So yung
When was this?
rationality,
Yeah.
That was in late 2018.
Okay.
October 2018.
Mm-hmm.
Tapos yung presentation namin, what was the
yes.
year? So 2018 yun. Tag dito? So yun yung ano, yung isa sa mga pinakamalaking bantano ng demolition sa San Roque. Tapos
yeah.
we organize this festival. Although I wasn't there nung screenings, yung insights from the community saka yung ibang organizers that were there is very helpful for us cultural organization in understanding how parang mas dialectical yung understanding. First
okay.
is how we understand yung situation ng San
yes
Roque and how they how we understand our position ourselves as cultural workers, especially cultural workers who are working for a film, and how we deal with synthesizing all of these conditions of precarity of
right. Sorry, so this film festival, Cinemaralita, correct?
Yep.
So tell me about it. Like, so it's a film festival, of course, where the subject is the urban poor, but they are also participants. Are they also filmmakers? Are they this audience or what? Like, yes.
That's an interesting question.
Sure. yeah, what's the concept?
Yung initial, of course, yung initial is that yung initial, syempre, yung programming is films about the urban poor. So, mas
about
ganun
the
siya.
urban poor. Okay.
So, eventually, nagkakaroon siya ng changes. So, it became festival conducted in the urban poor communities. Tapos, we endeavor
yes.
to do workshops. Also, yun nga, parang isa sa mga core assessments namin is that the urban poor is the busiest sector around. You can really pin them down to have a workshop. Parang,
well,
because they are very, very busy people trying
sure.
to find
But were there interested participants? Yeah.
There are. Kasi yun nga.
Yun
It's
nga.
fine to have common time between organizers,
Okay.
Participants and workshop instructors. So it, we kind of shelve that for an indefinite period even right now. Ngayon nag-iiba yung ano namin, yung framework ng workshops namin, like mas naging ngayon mas may ongoing kami na still under SICAD pero not film related. Meron kaming hip hop workshop na naman.
Hip hop workshop.
Yeah.
Okay.
So there's this yun, mas ganun yung napuntahan ng workshops namin kasi mas yun yung makakayang upuan ng mga available people from the community at the moment.
Okay.
So what's interesting about that particular edition 2018?
Yes.
Is since it is organized during the time na barricada. So yung barricada is when people are watching out kasi minsan ano eh they are guarding the safeguarding the community kasi the goons from the goons from the Ayala Corporation are
right
threatening
them yes
even during the night so mas may ganung context siya so that isa sa mga naging context nung festival nung 2018 is to keep them awake.
Right?
Tapos, and then eventually, it becomes a conversation between the filmmakers and the community. Tapos yung pinakamagandang remark doon nung ano, pinakamagandang remark doon ng isang organizer namin, na parang merong mga audience sa community na pinaparewind nila yung pelikula para lang mapag-usapan.
Ah, okay.
May ganong klaseng interaction to the point.
Kano kalaki yung film festival? Like, ilang tao nung, you know, pumunta?
Mas barikada kasi yun eh. So parang, kung sino yung gising at the time. Marami, 20. Parang give or take, pinakamarami 20. Tapos marami bata, ganyan.
Okay. At least there were a passionate few, yeah? Or, yeah. It's interesting, yeah. The fact that yun nga, busy sila. So, pero, well, they set aside time for movies. And that's very inspiring, yeah. Okay.
Tapos, ito na. Yung okay. What set the tone of the book is my encounter niya, encounter with Teddy Go. Kasi at the time,
yes,
when we are in the in Alternative Cinema Initiatives conference, what we were presenting there is, since it's alternative cinema, right? What we were presenting there is an alternative attitude towards film festivals or film screenings. Ang core namin is not actually to promote films, but rather to invite people to stand in solidarity with the urban poor. So, which is, sabihin natin, to, for lack of a better word, we were using cinema to organize, to politically organize.
Okay.
And then, we tried to steer the conversation on that way, on finding an alternative attitude on how we actually can mobilize the medium towards that more political or organizational angle na hindi nang hindi ang concern na ay definitely ang concern ay hindi taste, hindi aesthetic, di ba, hindi quote unquote film education. Tapos Teddy Ko, ito yung memory ko of Teddy Ko na hindi na niya nabawi sa akin. That's why I mean of course there's respect.
Yeah.
Na naive. So, of course, that very moment struck a chord in my head na never left until today.
Yeah.
Tinanong niya on a very condescending tone.
Ano yung nangyari sa audience? May nabago ba doon sa taste nila? Or would they still prefer escapist films? Kasi di ba mga urban poor yung audience? Ganun.
Interest. Okay. That sounds like a tense time. Yeah.
Yeah, so I paused for a long moment and then I answered him. Yung point po ng festival is not to change the taste of the people. Sabi ko, but to invite allies and invite potential allies to join the struggle for livable and workable housing for the urban.
Okay.
I maintain my composure pero yung anger is still there.
So rather than it's rather than having the poor serve the tastes of like the cinema or high cinema or as high culture, you're using cinema as a tool for the people's empowerment, the empowerment of the poor. Yeah. Okay. So how did that lead to like this book? Because there's bit of a gap here, right?
Yun na nga. Yung anger lingered.
For 2018 up to...
Of course, it's not just that moment, pero one of the key moments.
Sure.
Naipon yan eh. Naipon yan. Naipon yan. And then we
Speaking
have...
Ito na.
We have 2019 in April when I wrote A Theory of Movie Going. Yeah.
Mm.
When Nick DeOcampo, Professor Nick DeOcampo, delivered his lecture on the boom and bust movement in Philippine film, parang applying the economic theory of boom and bust. A very classic theory.
So, sorry, can you summarize that for the listeners who may not know? The boom and bust of film cinema. Yeah.
As an economic theory, yung point ng boom and bust is that it's the fashion for the trend of commodity is cyclical.
Mm-hmm.
That there will be peaks and there will be lows. And theoretically, if we are in a low, expect it in some time in the future that there will be high.
Uh-huh.
That it's the law of history. I think that's how that economists understand it. Although si Nick kasi, DeOcampo, professor, is not really an economist but a historian. Mm-hmm. Tried to make sense of that historically.
Okay.
That's where he tried to understand. Halimbawa, kasi merong claims, di ba? The claims of what the second golden age is, what is the golden age. Yung theory, di ba? Yung kay Joel David is that there was a second golden age because there is this maraming quality films that was produced in a particular amount of time. Then DeOcampo, Professor DeOcampo, tried to back that up, sabihin natin empirical way, that the 70s and the 80s are golden, so if the golden age, I mean, quote unquote, in sa kanya quote unquote yun eh. Kasi kung titignan mo siya, there are golden ages. So if there are golden ages, it's definitely the 70s is not a special moment. Yun yung argument niya. Kasi there are also highs in the 50s. There are also highs in the 30s. If we consider the quantity of films being produced.
Mm. How do you feel about this general theory? Yeah.
Well, I kind of agree. Kasi yun nga, it's backed by empirical data na eh. Na what really is the golden age? Syempre, it is something that also Joel David tried to reconcile in a year later, in years later about kasi that's a very sabi nga eh, well it's a tendency of a young critic to canonize, which is back in the Manonuris, di ba? And it served political purpose back then.
Okay.
So, syempre, years later that you have a critical distance, syempre, you see the weakness of what you were doing, right? It's canon making and dismissive of other works, which eventually yung isang point naging point ng position ni Nick DeOcampo as earlier as a proponent for alternative cinema.
Okay.
Even in the discussion of the 70s, naiiwan yung production ng short films. Bakit hindi ko consider yung short films as part of the canon? So yun yung isa sa mga maraming ganung issue. Anyway, 2019.
Yes.
Paano may ipon to?
Ayun,
so within that time kasi nagkaroon, may binato ring anecdotes ni Nick DeOcampo, which kind of struck a chord to me that I definitely disagree on.
Okay.
Kasi, although it sounds a bit more of a general, sabihin natin, general insight from a lot of people.
Yeah.
That whenever the industry failing at a particular time, they blame the audience for not watching a movie. At that point, parang parang okay, bakit ganun?
Yeah.
Bakit ganun yun?
Yeah. It's kind of like right now when the Disney how you say the a lot of people are making remakes and that they're no longer watching Disney films, so now they're blaming the audiences for not watching these films. It's a similar pattern here, don't you think? So I don't know. Okay.
Although, malala nung 2016, di ba? Since palapit na Metro Manila Film Festival, let's talk about the 2016.
Ah, yes. Which, by the way, we mentioned that in the previous one. And I personally love that year of MMFF, but go ahead. Yeah.
Yeah.
Go, yeah, go ahead. Yeah.
2016 was not loved by the industry as much as we think. Because
Yeah.
when we talk about industry, we're not just talking about the production side.
Yes.
We're also talking about the distribution side, and we're also talking about the exhibition side. That's when the exhibitors, the film exhibitors of the Philippines, especially from outside of Metro Manila, ganged up against the MMFF to not screen the films. Yeah.
I
Kaya
see.
nga yung 2016 was the time when Metro Manila Film Festival ended up solely being screened in Metro Manila.
Oh, that's what happened. Okay.
Yeah. They know, or rather, they have an impression, they have a market impression, yung exhibitors, that the films will not sell.
Or it's based because it's not, quote unquote, the industry's films, right?
Yeah.
They're more like art pieces or like passion projects for, you know, film makers. Yeah.
At the very least, as a scholar, as an academic back then, it was interesting. It was an interesting point in time because that's where you get the extremes of reactions towards several sides of the industry. That was on the part of the audiences. Meron ding extreme reactions. Like, dun ko unang na-realize or dun ko talaga mas unang nabasa at least on how people reacted towards it. Yung mas parang condescension sa audience na bakit hindi pinapanood tong mga to, ganyan-ganyan.
Right. Interesting. I don't know.
Yeah,
that
so
actually,
if you try to trace my history of absorbing those condescensions, you kind of get the culmination of that in that book.
Yeah. So I think, correct me if I'm wrong here, but the assumption is, you know, they're trying, okay, they make these films and they expect the audience to eat it up. So it's like, you should serve the cinema. But what you're arguing seems like the cinema should serve the people. Am I right? Or like it should be.
Well,
that's,
yeah. Because anyway,
go
if
ahead.
If we really wanted to make it, eh, sa akin dito, mas ano pa to, ah? Hindi pa to socialist angle pa talaga sa argument
Sure.
ko. Mas kapitalista pa to eh. Actually, the argument ko is a very capitalist one. We can blame the producers, actually.
And demand for better art or better,
the
entertainment.
If the films are failing,
yeah.
They can only blame themselves because they're not catering a
Right.
market that is already existing. Pero kasi syempre, di ba, ang argument nila, eh, basura yung market. Eh, that's what you think. But the people the market do not care.
And what happened to the customers always right? You know, you have to cater to the tastes. Their tastes should not cater to whatever you think they want. So, I sympathize.
That's
I do
just
want,
putting it in a capitalist perspective, palang, diba?
Yeah.
So,
Although,
kind of, from both sides of a political spectrum, diba? From
sure.
the both of political spectrum, you kind of see how that kind of quote unquote art.
Yeah.
Art house attitude towards cinema. Tapos ini-impose mo siya on a commercial platform is
yes.
Disagreeable on both sides of the spectrum.
Uh-huh.
Which is a weird dilemma to deal with.
Yeah.
For the art inclined.
Like I actually sympathize with your disdain for this elite snobbery, you know, of over like the audiences. But here's what I think this is the time in the podcast where I really want to ask you now, like,
for
those
sure.
are valid, you know, and I'm sure a lot of people would agree with you on that. But you chose to begin with the term, and you titled your project Post-Dilawan Cinema. I think this is the time where I want to ask, you know, why post-Dilawan? Why not say liberal or capitalist or
Well,
something else? Why label? Yeah.
That's where I get most
Oh.
Marx position that I can.
Okay. So you're not a fan of the Dilawans, yeah? Understatement.
Yeah.
Okay. Sure. Yeah.
Qualified. Okay. May qualification, of course. There's a qualification naman. Parang, yung akin dito kasi, clearly, Whatever happened to Philippine cinema and whatever happened to the Filipino audience is not isolated from the whole spectrum of living experience. Of course, the book itself, even the theoretical framework, it's not just cultural.
It's
Definitely,
affect
I try to incorporate economic and political reasons why it amounted to that. And the term Dilawan, for example, is a conflated concept, diba? It's a
Sure.
conflated concept that alludes not just to political but also to economic preferences of a certain group of people.
Okay.
So, and I tried to map out the thread and the Dilawan thread, as I would argue in that book, started not just in 2010, but definitely after the first EDSA.
The return of democracy, quote unquote, you know, the victory of the
So
Aquinos, yeah.
Nandoon yung thread ng argumentation ko on how, for example, a certain celebration, a certain celebratory attitude in the political atmosphere affected cinema culturally. What I said example there is the rise of, I'm not sure if people actually observe it, pero this is something that I observed. I hinted it in the book that the rise of franchise movies in the Philippines was definitely popularized after EDSA Revolution. So we have the people in the franchise. You had the before Enteng Kambisote, there was this TV show Okay Ka Pereko, which also had its series of movies, and definitely hindi nagkaroon kaagad ng second Shake, Rattle, and Roll. After nung first one,
right,
it arrived years later in the 90s.
Yeah.
So, if napansin kung mapapansin mo yung shift noon, it's an economic shift in the formation of, or rather in the attitude nung producers towards producing films. At the time when dapat bago na lahat.
Yeah.
Kasi sila nagpo-produce ng the same thing. So parang yun yung contradiction.
Yeah.
First contradiction that they haven't faced that time, kasi yung celebration nila, yung political celebration nila amounted to a certain kind of impunity. That they can do what they want.
Yeah. Interesting. So, let me get this straight now. The like once the 80s and after the EDSA Revolution, there's a return of democracy, you know, global, the Philippines became more integrated with the global economy. So movies became, well, movies in the 70s and 80s were flourished as a free art form, maybe even a form of protest, but it became eventually a product or a consumerist a consumption product.
Well, in an ideal sense, it should
yeah.
be. In an ideal sense, it should
yes.
be. Right.
But but it became like the,
but
yeah,
it
the
didn't
franchise.
Work that
yeah.
way. It didn't work that way. Kaya nung 70s, maraming fly by night na producers na they just in it for easy money, not necessarily for a business venture, which a kind of a double-edged sword
sure.
in production. Kasi first, of course, it contributed to the quantitative growth, di ba? Contributed to quantitative growth na madaming fly-by net producers, hindi madaming pelikula, maraming ticket sales, and maraming projects. Problem is that wala pa sa vocabulary nila yung sustainability at the time. Na very in a way, very scammy pa yung attitude nung tapos when studios thrived again in the 90s, mas ganun na. So it was
right.
more of a business feature than a sole independent merchandising project.
Okay.
Which was, in a way, a development. What happened is that since a lot are producing the same, it kind of dwindled down in quality.
Yeah.
eventually that decline in quality led to a decline in quantity of production, which led to a crisis. Weirdly enough, at the time when people from the film industry are in position of power. So Senator Estrada, the future President Estrada was a senator, di ba? Was a senator in Cory Aquino administration, and then eventually a vice president. Pero that didn't really help the industry. And then that was in a way yung naging fate nung yung celebratory attitude ng liberalism, or rather neoliberal na yun that time. Mas nag-drive na yung hindi na nag mapapansin mo yun kahit na meron tayong it should have been the industry's tawag dito most useful nepotism yung artista sa Senado pero hindi niya natulong yung industry because that's a very neoliberal attitude. Diba? It's not intervening whatever it is that the businesses are doing.
Sure. I mean, that's a very interesting ecosystem wherein there's a lot of interactions between the business side and the political side of the production of what you call Dilawan cinema. But I do want to ask, though, for our listeners, how, like, are you saying that, just to clarify, are you saying that all movies produced in this period are known as Dilawan cinema, or are there key characteristics? Okay.
It's more of how I define cinema.
How would you define it then? Yeah.
Yeah. Cinema is not films. It's not a film. Okay. Cinema is the ecosystem. Cinema is the relationship.
Okay.
Between the aspects of production. It's definitely what is included in a cinema when you refer, for example, if we refer a Philippine cinema, diba? We're not just referring to the films produced by the Philippines, right? We're also referring to the theaters. We're also referring to the distributors. Also referring to the film people. We're also referring to the film business. We're also referring to the audiences. That's Philippine cinema. So when I refer to Dilawan cinema, it's the effect of the political atmosphere at the time to that ecosystem.
And so what kind of movies are being produced in this ecosystem? You know, I mean, I think
what they do to that movies.
What? Sorry?
What kind of movies and what they do to those movies?
Okay.
So yun yung questions, yun yung mas keywords natin. It's not just the films, but what they do to it.
Sure. So what do they do to it?
So do they sell it, or do they just produce it just because they can, or do they produce it with an audience in mind? Do they produce it with a market in mind, or do they produce it with a certain kind of business attitude in mind? So at the time. And at least if we try to understand it from the theoretical framework that I am proposing in the cinema in the Dilawan time, the Dilawan era. Although, mas ano pati, sabihin nating retroactive na, di ba? Kasi Dilawan is a more contemporary term. Pero sa akin, retroactive derivation, it's definitely just neoliberalism in a nutshell.
Sure.
Kasi, diba? It yung particular kind of neoliberalism present in sabihin natin in the semi-feudal semi-colonial atmosphere, diba? Kasi this is something that I also argue that if I refer to cinema,
right,
also including the theater,
sure,
and the distributors, that would also entail that when I refer to Philippine cinema, it also includes the foreign films that are being seen here. Not necessarily as a part of the ecosystem.
Right. See, and but I do want to...
During that time, and this is something also that was carried over the history of colonization that we had. Diba? When we opened the market to the Americans, to the world in 1946, or definitely just the Americans, diba? Cinema is included there. And in 1946, when we became the nation, di ba? At that time, ang world cinema lang na meron ay Amerika. Kasi sira yung Europe eh. Binombayan. Walang German cinema, walang Italian cinema, walang French cinema. There's just, and walang Japanese cinema, definitely.
So,
walang,
I mean,
cinema.
So, So
From
actually,
that
so n sorry, when you're the way you're describing this now is that malawak na ang target mo. So, but which is the weird thing when you say Dilawan, when people know you're Dilawan, you're pinpointing to one that is the cinema or like the milieu of Benigno Aquino III, you know. And I think even some of the movies that you mentioned here, like for example, El Cuento Nating Dalawa, Alone Together, you know, these are very quote unquote innocent n enough romance films, you know. But I do want to get to again the content rather than of course, the content is a product of the ecosystem that you mentioned, but how does that reinforce the ecosystem? You know, because of course this has a particular effect on the
Well,
audience.
ideological yun na sa part ng ecosystem. Ideological. Pero siguro ano lang, gawin ko lang yung tail end ng yung colonial argument na that I was mentioning. It's definitely part ng ecosystem, yung semi-colonial attitude ng economic policies, you know that. So, yeah, definitely, sabihin natin in a nutshell, the theaters favor Hollywood. Okay? Let's just go to that conclusion already. Theaters favor Hollywood. So that limits the kind of films that we get to produce. Right? Now, I mentioned there the decline of action films in the 80s and the 90s. Ironically, again, when there are action stars in the Senate and in the national offices. A lot of them, I think I cited enough of this text, but a lot of my argument from there, something that I learned from a friend named Cello. You probably saw him in BLTX. In his essay, The Killing of Agency. So in that essay, he argued on an ideological side that the Aquino era, or rather the Arroyo era, presented an emasculation of Philippine movies.
In what sense?
Ironically, at a time when the Philippines is so militarized, Arroyo era presented us thousands of disappeared activists, been tortured activists. And this is where it gets interesting in Carlos' argument, how he criticizes or how he parallels the very militarized, definitely fascist reality of Gloria Macapagal Arroyo's regime in contrast to films getting produced at the time. Are you familiar with the most popular film at the time
Which
during
time?
from 2001 to 2010?
Go ahead.
Definitely are the rom-coms of star cinema. So, kung titignan mo siya from that point, at least from the essay ni Carlo, it definitely contributed to a kind of attitude that definitely characterizes how a Dilawan would act generally
Sorry, can
in the
you be specific on that?
Okay. So, di ba, sabihin natin, we get militarized in Gloria Arroyo time, pero yung culture mo is not really confronting that. What they did is that they make the matinee idols cry on screen. Tapos, syempre, yung argument is that men can also cry, right? Pero is that
We're
what you
going
need?
into gender dynamics now, yeah.
Yeah, but the argument is that politically, is that what you need? At the time when we get militarized, is crying what you need.
So it's in a way softening the opposition, you know. If
Oh,
you're
yeah.
teaching your and
Definitely.
conditioning your males to cry, you know, instead of fight. Interesting. Yeah, then that
Definitely.
mean yeah.
Definitely. The cinema back then actively contributed to kind of cultural atmosphere that the Arroyo aiming at. If you try to notice it, the Arroyo, Gloria Macapagal Arroyo herself, was exposed to several scandals. Almost all of them are impeachable. Impeachable offenses like cheating in an election. But she was not impeached. So if you try to look at it, of course, hindi natin dinidismiss yung efforts nung political opposition, definitely not really blaming the efforts of the activists back then.
Right.
Pero if you try to look at definitely yung cultural atmosphere at the time, especially doon sa mga sectors na dapat kakampi ng mga activists at the time. I mean, yung the Petersburg sector, di ba? Since they are the ones involved or the ones involved, immersed rather in this kind of, sabihin natin, emasculating culture.
Yeah.
But they kind of see, well, tinitingnan nila yun as a resistance of some sort kasi parang they are doing something else or something different than the militarization. So parang okay, that can be an argument. Pero it doesn't, if you historically analyze it, it doesn't really change a thing.
I mean, so, I'm not entirely sure if it's like the films are somewhat directly responsible for like the resilience of the entire
regime. Ang argument dito as a part of the apparatus. It's not just being responsible to that, but definitely it contributes to the atmosphere of
compliance,
cowardness and compliance,
cowardice and compliance.
Kasi eventually that contributed to the attitude na pagdating ng Aquino era, di ba?
Yeah.
Na ang attitude sa mga aktivista, huwag kayo reklamo, ba't di ikaw maging presidente?
Wait, during nung panahon ni ano, Noynoy Aquino?
Oh, ganun yung reaction sa opposition noon eh. Tawag doon, tumulong ka na lang.
You know, it's funny. This is the same rhetoric used in the Duterte administration. So there's not a lot of difference in that aspect.
Doon papasok yung vote nila.
Okay. Sige.
Kaya may continuity yun. Kaya wala masyadong contrasting doon. Pero that attitude, parang yung from the galit sa rally attitude. I mean, let's start from the Arroyo era, right? From nang pumapatay na activist attitude to the galit sa rally attitude of the Aquino era. Diba? And then, i-contribute mo yung cultural angle mo na, okay, we are doing rom-coms. Where people cry about their problem.
But then again, we are already, you mentioned the post-Dilawan. Minsan, actually parang nawawala at namamantay din yung mga rom-coms, di ba? As in, at lumalabas din yung mga violence,
where,
the role of violence in the post-Dilawan thing. So,
that's
it's
where
not,
we get the OTJ.
Well,
get the OTJ.
Or maybe the resurrecting of the FPJ. In fact, I think there's...
No, not FPJ, OTJ.
OTJ, on the job, right. Actually,
let's
this
get
is
on the
one of the few times that action films have returned in Philippines. Well, not quite returned in volume, but it's become a presence again. Yeah,
but not in a way that that it promotes actual agency to people, right? Kasi definitely, panahon ni FPJ, di ba? Or even in the 80s action cinema, kahit nasabihin natin, okay, merong mali dun, pero definitely there's this action hero who saves the people and wins. Although there are tragic heroes, but they never condemn his act of resistance. Sa film Celino Brava, di ba ganun yun eh? Sa film Celino Brava, definitely those are tragic heroes, but they never condemn resistance.
So what is the difference between the action hero and the post-Dilawan violence? Because like what you said, in post-Dilawan, violence is not necessarily contributes to resistance, but can actually be used to help with compliance. Help me make sense of that.
Yung cynicism nung ano, yung cynicism that the films show towards resistance and direct action. Kasi yun yung
So this is violence employed by the system. Because I remember on the job, the actors, it's from the perspective of policemen.
Yeah,
which
pero
can be connected
yung
to Provinciano, who is played by Coco Martin in TV.
Yeah. PJ, diba? Parang good guy pa nga yung police dun eh.
Yes.
But so he tried to do the right thing.
Mm-hmm.
Pero ano yung cynical dun is yung pinatay siya sa dulo of his own, pinatay siya of his own family. Tapos definitely, yung mga masasamang tao dun, by virtue of the class position
Oo.
ng pelikula, yung mga masasamang tao syempre may hirap, which is very consistent to Eric Nati.
But here's the thing. I want to ask you this. Ba't mo tinawag post-Dilawan? Bakit hindi DDS Cinema or Duterte Cinema? Kasi pansin mo, lumalabas din yung mga By Bust, you know, General Luna. You know, very violent films usually in the milieu of Duterte. You know, so why not call it the Duterte? Why post-Dilawan?
But because they are Dilawan, pero with few extra steps.
So, okay. So you're saying that perhaps the Duterte regime wasn't quite in control of the media industry. In fact, if anything, the media...
Not necessarily.
Yeah. Okay.
Pero, alam mo yun, kasi, kahit sabihin, ano siya eh? Kasi, andun tayo sa argument na we are doing this democratically, right? So, the way that we understand state apparatuses is that it's state apparatuses are not really directly controlled by the state. But rather is that the convolution, or rather the sabihin nating social contract. Social contract among the ruling classes.
Yeah.
Definitely puts them in alignment to certain things.
These things are?
Well, yung sa argument ko sa libro, syempre, violent resistance is a no-no for both sides.
Okay. But it's violent repression. Yeah, that's okay. For the police.
Yeah,
kasi lumalabas din yung ano eh. Dumadami yung mga pelikula
violence.
Na ano eh. May mga military films, di ba? Including
yeah,
right now, Mama Sapano, di ba? Or
Definitely, what they, yung dialectical angle na syempre, definitely they just want a monopoly for violence. Kasi parang ano yan eh. Pag mahirap ka, di ba? Parang gano'n lang yan. Kung titignan mo siya sa ruling classes, di ba? Ruling classes lang ang pwede mangapi. Mantika,
okay.
Mahirap ka, masama kang tao.
Although, I don't know. I'm still trying to make sense because, again, how do you say, the movies of these times are, come to think of it, they're very much anti-Duterte, anti-repression. They're quite, quote-unquote, progressive. You know,
which
mga
ones?
kakampink, di ba? Here's the thing. For example, a movie highlight, Fangirl, you know, which is very critical of the Duterte administration as well as the violent masculine energy that it is critiquing.
Pero kasi nga,
yeah, but
yung,
there's still post-Dilawan, is that what you're saying? Yeah.
Yeah, yung point ng Fangirl is that it doesn't really put agency to the girl, right? What she did, what she just called the police.
Well, the agency
she
there
didn't.
is at least her capacity to escape from, again, and detach from her idol. At that point was Paolo Avellino, she was a fan of, but eventually reality hit her, you know. The twist, there's a twist, I won't spoil it, but again, she was able to detach. So that agency is in that level. It's not political, but it's in the personal level, I suppose, there's still agency. I suppose your argument is there, that the agency is in the interpersonal level, but not necessarily the political, which involves social change.
Eh, ganun na nga siya, di ba? Parang yung paghahanap mo ng agency, nagiging ano siya, nagiging argumentative siya.
I mean,
siya,
come to think, yeah. So,
pinaka-better example would be, ano eh, Babae at Baril eh.
What's that?
that
Babae at Baril. Tell us about that.
That film by Ray Redd. So, well, it's about this sales lady who was assaulted, sexually assaulted in her workplace. And then she found a gun. And the film, after that sequence of her finding a gun, got to through the history of that gun, where was it from and where is it going, until eventually it arrived to the hands of that girl. That was eventually when she had the opportunity shoot his violator, her violator. She deliberately missed that and just scared him. And then throw the gun at the river. And smiled as if she won.
So you're saying she should have shot the bastard,
Definitely.
I'm starting to understand what you're saying. It gives what you wrote in the book a bit more dimension and elaboration. Although I do want to move to a bit another topic, which, by the way, I suppose is another side of the post-Ilawan cinema, which is, I think, you discussed them at length, and we've discussed them on the podcast as well. Darryl Yap and Vincente Mence and Viva Max. So they're quite dominant in the cultural milieu today, and there's well,
They
maybe
were.
yeah,
They were.
they were okay.
They
Well,
were.
before you can clarify that, but there is a diff. Well, they represented somewhat of a shift. Like there is an outward, how you say, expression of, let's say, resentment, or like through, I don't know, through the sentiments, etc. So yeah, can you elaborate on that? Like what he represents in
Okay,
the
two
eras
levels.
or the yeah.
Sorry. Two levels no aesthetic configuration that I found
Sure.
out while trying to study them.
Yeah.
Is of course the deployment of the same aesthetic techniques as the rom-coms. So definitely yung post-Dilawan element is there
Right.
from an aesthetic level. They are definitely influenced by this string of rom-coms from the Arroyo era to the Aquino era. So then, hugot yun eh. If you try to look at a Vincente Mence short, it's definitely hugot. It's just a different
Right.
content. Form-wise, it's hugot. It's just different content. So there's that aesthetic angle.
Right.
And in another attitude, of course. Well, the attitude is very conservative. That's where it reverted back its own liberalism. But at the same time, it's liberal to other factors. Pero it's a very Aquino era attitude, definitely. Kasi andun yung ano eh, di ba? In the Aquino era, there's definitely liberalism with regards to private property, right? Definitely liberalism with regards to businesses. Pero with regards to ownership, they are not liberal. That they are very conservative about the sorry mali mali yung argument ko mali mali yung nasabi ko nina. So they are liberal about businesses and investment and trying to please foreign investors, but they are very conservative about private property, in
What
which na
about, why not call them illiberal?
no, it's very
Have you heard of
liberal
the term? It's
yeah
very
pero yun nga, it's a very peculiar character of liberalism in the Philippines. It's very, very peculiar
Well,
because it's informed by still a backward attitude towards private property, which is very feudal. Kasi
Well,
landed pa rin yung people, landed pa rin yun eh. It's a very landed thing. Pero yun nga, they are definitely Dilawan in the sense that they are open to privatization of public utilities, public services. They are very open to the deregulation of government intervention to businesses. And yeah, that's the Dilawan. That's the Dilawan attitude politically. Or rather economically, or it's the same. So that's the whole thing. They capture the neoliberal attitude at the same time retaining the conservatism of feudalism, which makes them Dilawan. Okay, I think I can find it now theoretically
Why isn't it illiberal?
because it's not, it's still liberal.
How is it? Do you know what I mean when I say illiberal? When you are not tolerant of certain imasalot ng lipunan, which is very much how you say in the milieu of,
Pero kasi
I
ano
think,
siya, parang yung how I understand it is that it's definitely more of a conservative thing of self, anyway, self a self-serving thing rather than it's sabihin nating non-person. For the ruling classes, definitely you are a non-person. So kumbaga, the conservative attitude does not concern you, but concerns
Right.
them.
But that's inequality.
Of course.
Liberalism highlights, at the very least, equality before the law or human rights.
Yeah,
you
yun
know?
na nga. Kaya,
Yeah.
which is why I was saying
So why call it liberal?
Yun nga. Ang, which is why I'm saying is that yung dilawan thing is definitely a neoliberal thing, not liberal. It's neoliberal.
It's neoliberal.
Yep.
All right.
I mean, yun naman yung tatlong principles ng neoliberalism. It's deregulation, it's privatization, and it's market liberalization. Yun lang naman yung tatlong principles.
Yeah, so well, the question was about, again, Daryl Yap and the Viva Max, no?
We will get to that.
Okay. How
so,
about now?
Again, from an ideological point, what was championed by the whole tradition of Hugot is the privatization of love life.
Isn't love inherently private if it's between you and your lover? In fact, Hannah Arendt would say that love is the least political thing and can never be political.
But the
or
thing is,
romance.
You're making a movie.
Yeah. And movies can be...
It should at least have a social angle to it. Right?
Well, social does not mean political.
Of course.
It's quite...
I'm not saying that. What I mean is that...
Yeah.
If you've seen Before Sunrise, I think.
Yeah, the trilogy between
Yeah.
his name. Seen it,
If you try to watch it, it's definitely not alienating.
What do you mean?
You're
Alienating.
These partners definitely are not showing you off as an audience. They're trying to include you to the conversation. Even if they're not really talking to you. So a lot of factors are involved, which is why I wrote it in a book. Because
Sure,
I can't
sure.
talk about it in length. Pero the whole neoliberal thing of the privatization, something also that Mark Fisher argued in his privatization of what's
sure.
this? Privatization of something. Privatization of stress. Or about how neoliberalism definitely argued for a further privatization of our personal life. I mean, personal is not necessarily private. The
Certainly.
privatization of personal life wherein everything is just psychological. And definitely yung psychological in the neoliberal period is a booming business wherein we just need to keep it private and people should not, on a social angle, people should
Yeah.
not care about my understanding of my mental health because only I know what I'm going through. That's the neoliberal attitude towards mental health. Definitely something that carried over to the whole Hugot thing about how eventually their love life or their love story started here and then they do not care about you and we're just here and we're just there and we're not really going anywhere.
Yeah.
But talk about it. That's definitely how Daryl Yap approached it. Definitely he tried to maintain some conservative attitude. Of course it's coming from a very different context. Pero, yeah, there's still a retention of that, how the violent outbursts. Kung papansin mo yung twist palagi sa KPL sa kung pwede lang, di ba?
Kung pwede lang, yeah.
Yung twist palagi sa kung pwede lang is that all of that is just in the head of the person. Yung violent outburst niya is just in the head of the person. Hindi niya talaga yung sasabihin.
Well, I do want to move on from like your book because your book somewhat definitely criticizes a lot of titles. And you talk about, of course, I'm trying to understand here because, you know, personal is not necessarily private. Sure. There's something in there. Although not, I have to also argue that not all art need be public political, you know, but Can you, well, besides, of course, the Before Sunrise series, you know, starring Ethan Hawke, you know, and I forgot the girl's name, you know, but can you give me perhaps movies maybe in the Philippines that beyond the Dilawan framework that illustrates perhaps your ideal of like the depiction of a personal narrative that is not necessarily privatized according to the neoliberal mindset? Like maybe an example of your ideal. Like how should it be depicted?
Which ones?
The per because a lot of art is about the journey, the personal journey of a character. And your argument, yes, a lot of times it's personalized, privatized, sure, it's internalized. I'm sorry, I think in terms of politically, it might have certain adverse effects, sure. But in terms of like narrative and storytelling, I think it's still necessary, you know. But
Which
so
ones?
the depiction of an internal, you know, character struggle that is deeply private, because that's how human nature works. Certain things are deeply private, which you can argue to an extent. Yes, I agree that it is privatizing. It could align with neoliberalists, but other times, certain thoughts and feelings are inherently private. But I want to understand, you know, how then should certain personal journeys be depicted that is not alienating, as you said, because you say that a lot of these neoliberal privatization of these journeys are alienating. So can you give an example of things that are that depictions of the personal journeys that are not alienating? You mentioned the Before Sunrise series. Do you have any other maybe local examples?
Well, you can only probably see those from the pre-Dilawan era. Well, definitely there are, kasi syempre in the 80s and the 90s, definitely in the 90s it's a transition, eh. It's a transition between the old form of story exposition, the championing of the formula of the hero's journey. It, of course, it dwindled down to a further, sabihin natin, not bleaker but cynical attitude towards a resolution. Pero
How about a,
definitely,
can you tell me about a movie that you actually loved? Did you have a movie that you love and have not many complaints about? Maybe that aligns with your politics.
locally,
Yeah. Or in yeah, we're talking about
locally,
Philippine cinema. Yeah.
a hard question actually.
So you're that angry with a lot of things.
No,
Well, okay.
not necessarily angry, but if you say that align, well, there are films that I like that definitely did not align
Like
The Triumph of the Will.
the triumph of the
Yeah, well, I like that film, but it definitely did not align with me.
Okay, all
You
right.
can learn a lot from that from a
Nazi
documentary.
propaganda. Okay,
Of
all
course.
right.
But you definitely
Locally,
can
yeah.
learn. You can learn a lot from it from a documentary standpoint.
Sure, yeah.
You can
I'm
recognize
sure
the
Paul
scene.
Soriano learned a lot of it and applied it
Oh,
to their sauna.
I just
Yeah.
hope so because
Yeah.
I just hope so. I mean, a lot of people are comparing fascist lapdogs to Riefenstahl. In reality, they are not Riefenstahl.
Oh, but pale imitations, I understand. Like we can see in a superficial level, he's imitating Leonard Riefenstahl, especially during the first sauna.
I have those moments.
Yeah.
Definitely, there are a lot of things that I disagree on that I but I really like the films. Pero something that I think is an ideal. Yun nga, kasi syempre, I'm looking at it from an outside in perspective. So I
Right.
don't think that Philippine cinema right now is capable of going out of the framework if they do not participate also in the social struggle. So definitely a lot of politics needs to be worked out. It's not a problem of aesthetic. It's not a problem of narrative framework. It's not a problem.
So, can you give maybe certain titles that at the maybe
Well, a
serve
lot
that
of them were
function?
probably a lot of them were documentaries, of course.
Such as?
Well, definitely locked in the limits of neoliberalism, but there is an attempt to expose imperialist narratives in Audio Perpetua. Right? This is a document made by, she told me that it is not yet finished, but it was made by the Universe Valdosa back in 20, when was it? 2017. But I'm not an idealist.
Okay.
I definitely won't really say what my ideal movie is, because the point of the book is to expose the, how do you say this, the interrelation of culture, politics, and economics, and in a way that it captures a zeitgeist, if you will, and how it proceeds from a macro framework to a micro framework and back and forth.
Let me reframe the question. Since you're not an idealist, you mentioned, I mean, again, you mentioned that cinema is the interrelationships of the things that produce the movies, you know, the society, politics, economics, business, etc. How then should it be? You know, how would you describe what you think PH cinema should be?
Oh, that's definitely the conclusion of the book.
Okay, there you go.
It's a cinema that does not serve the landlords.
Mm-hmm.
It should be the cinema that does not serve the politicians, definitely. Mm-hmm. It should be the cinema that does not serve the interest of the feelings of any individuals. Mm. Just because you want to share that feeling to you, does it mean that it deserves to be shared to everyone? on a commercial scale, of course.
Sure.
Because so that's what the whole good.
But you're answering in the negative.
Yeah.
What then is, what about some positive answers? Like, what should it be? What should it serve? Like, maybe a more positive example. What?
It should be fun.
Again, sorry?
It should be fun.
It should be fun. F-U-N.
Yeah.
Okay, that's, I can agree with that. Again.
Because a lot of Phuket films are not fun.
A lot of Phuket films are fun at first until Phuket isn't, you know. So, can you give an example of a fun movie that is like maybe beyond Phuket? Do you have an example of like a fun, like a movie you found fun? This just surprised me actually. I was expecting like a hardline political answer, you know. But you said it's fun.
No, no, so, no. I'm coming from a point from a realization upon watching Godard's
Histoire de
Cinema. I'm not sure if it's Histoire de Cinema, but it's the main argument of Histoire de Cinema is that it all boils down to entertainment.
Then again, entertainment. What if they stop? Well, that's the weird thing. It's difficult to make a film that is fun, but may incidentally serve the landlords.
Then it's not a problem of cinema anymore. It's a problem of land. Which is why the suggestion in the end
is that the last, the 713 point program for revitalization of
Philippine
cinema.
Because for as long as other people are benefiting from our fun, it won't be fun for us.
okay, all right. Fair enough. So again, what I'm going to ask again, when was the last time you had fun watching a movie?
last 2 days ago.
And what do you watch?
I watched this documentary, Kim's Video.
Kim's Video?
Yeah.
What's it about?
It's about this documentary filmmaker that was trying to look for a very old video store in New York.
Okay.
Which was torn down by the development, and then eventually all the holdings of that store, around 55,000 titles of foreign films, weird films, was donated to an Italian city with an agreement that any member of that video store is free, can freely go, just go to that place and access the collection. But the thing is that the collection was neglected for almost a decade. The documentary eventually shifted into a fictional mode.
Okay.
That I'm really spoiling it right now, but
whatever. Sure.
Shifted into a fictional mode where they propose to the mayor that they are doing a heist film with the archive as the setting of the, like Argo.
I see.
Where the archive is the setting of the heist that he brought after is there and stole the collection piece by piece.
Mm.
And eventually, an arrangement was... It's a victorious movie. It made me fun. It made me happy.
Okay. Yeah.
Kind of
and it's a documentary, meaning it's true. Yeah. It has a basis of reality. Yeah.
In a way, for me, it was fun to see people do things for their community.
Mm.
It's definitely something that the filmmaker did not just do for himself. Of course, there's that factor of nostalgia. Mm. But
right.
He also cares for that video store and the memory and the people who was brought up by that store.
Okay.
So definitely something that made it worthwhile seeing. It's the struggle of all.
Uh-huh. Yeah.
And how they succeeded in the end.
You know, Epoy, I'm going to say this now. I think I kind of mentioned it in the pre-recording, but I'll say this on record now. The person that I was expecting to to meet, which ended this book in Death to the Landlords, Death to the Marcoses, Death to the Cuanco Aquinos, Death to the Dutertes, Death to U.S. Imperialism, etc., was a very angry, venomous person, you know. And to an extent, I did meet him today, but the fact that the way that you, of course, number one, you also are seeking out films that have fun, and I am now enticed to watch Kim's video. Yeah, that I think that's a right balance, you know. I do want to ask though, since this is written a few years ago, maybe it's a work out of accumulated anger, as you mentioned, since 2018, maybe even before that. And then finally released in 2021 and then re-released in 2023. I do want to ask, first of all, last two questions. Number one, are you still the same person that wrote this, or do you still maybe connected? Where do you find hope in Philippine cinema?
Well, I think the right question to ask is that, is the world still the same?
Mm.
Because definitely, I don't matter in that narrative.
Well, I'm asking about you. Haha. And I think we can account for ourselves.
Well, from that era, I wrote that back when I was a precariat worker. I'm still a precariat worker.
Sure.
So yeah, definitely it's the same.
You're still a kind of angry person.
I still have delayed salaries right now. So
yeah.
Definitely the same.
Yeah.
I just have more work right now and less time with my family.
Oh, okay.
Yeah.
So, still angry, just busier.
Definitely. Well, the book is angry. It's a choice of rhetoric.
Mm-hmm.
I think this is something that people often confuse with. Although there are personal parts of it.
Yes.
A lot of are very conscious rhetorics.
Mm-hmm.
And it's something that I deeply respect with earlier critics, is that as much as they write from a both personal and professional point, they see that the rhetoric fits the point that they're trying to point across.
Okay.
Much of the core of my arguments.
Mm.
Coming from the critical point, especially in the starting 2016, there's another story. There's another story from 2016, but I would rather reserve it in another venue or what.
Sure.
But it's more of a conscious choice of style, and to reflect a point that I was trying to put across and not to make ref and not to reflect myself, because definitely that's a historical book.
So
Just
what did you
with
say
a,
about yourself? Yeah, you
just
said
with
that.
a hint of a personal background, just to make sense where I was coming from and was trying to bring the argument across.
And so, do you see hope in Philippine cinema?
Well, that question is answerable if I see hope in the Philippine society. Definitely there is hope. I just need to find it where I find it.
Well, I'm thinking though.
And there's hope in, if you try to phrase it positively, there are two positive points that I point out in this 13-point program.
Sure.
Point 11, resume the GRP and NDFPP stocks, which is definitely resuming from this administration.
Okay.
And
Not bad for
onwards,
a Marcos. Anyway.
Onwards People's Agenda. Well, ironically, it came from the Marcos regime.
All right.
And definitely, of course, when the agenda of the National Democratic Front definitely is to point forward the agenda of the Comprehensive Agreement for Socioeconomic Reforms. That's where my hope relies, because definitely that's something that will affect not just Philippine cinema, but all of us. It's just, and that's just basic provisions in social reforms. It's not necessarily revolutionary, but it's something beneficial to all of us. And which is why the hope lies from there. Not definitely filmmakers will do things that they think will help better understand the world that we are living right now, or definitely some of them will do fun films. Definitely there are several relatively fun films from the years since I'm writing that. Definitely there are, but it's definitely that's not the point that I'm trying to put across.
Sure. I think that's an interesting way of putting it. If you want a better cinema, you need to have a better society, which feels a bit more of a bigger order, if you ask me. Yeah, of course. Oh, yeah. No, and again, I'm not saying that's certainly that's definitely correct. It's just that I'm a bit more romantic, and I think that there is. Well, I do also believe that art can produce a better society. I suppose that's mutually reinforcing. Some people would say maybe there's a chicken and an egg. You know, maybe a better cinema can produce a better society, or it reinforces. Maybe they're mutually reinforcing. You need a good cinema to have a good society, and vice versa. But here's the weird thing. I am surprised that, for one thing, you're quite practical and balanced compared to the rhetoric you are in your book. I'm you're more multidimensional person. I'm happy to have talked to, and it was quite interesting to elaborate on your works here. I do have to say that if I were to describe the kind of cinema, you're right. I do agree that cinema or movies should be fun. They should not only serve the elites, the snobs, the
and they should
film, landlords,
one,
certainly.
I think I have an ideal form right now.
Sure.
Just thought about it. The ideal form of Philippine cinema is a Philippine cinema that does not screen Hollywood films.
I mean, I wouldn't say not screen Hollywood, but it would
I told you it's an ideal.
It is an ideal, but I would say, yeah, for me, a more multivocal and diverse local cinema would be good and can compete with Hollywood cinema.
Well,
a Philippine cinema
that's
that
where,
is
that's
not
where the argument
threatened.
against
That is,
where,
it's a Philippine cinema that is not threatened by Hollywood. It need not ban Hollywood films. But
well,
it
that's the
can
thing about
compete.
the thing about the neoliberal framework of competition, right? Everything is actually in the guise of competition right now, right? that they limit the films that they screen in the theater, that they limit the Filipino films to 3 per week because the distributors will say to you that that's the amount of number that that can actually compete against Hollywood.
Sure. My ideal need not ban Hollywood. But it can at the very at, it should allow for Hollywood and many, many other local cinemas to increase, which is the regional, which
well,
you talked about
I can, well, I can
earlier.
Compromise. Since you mentioned the word allow,
sure,
we should allow them in our own terms.
Sure,
because definitely they are here on their terms. That's how imperialism works. They are here
sure
on their own terms.
I mean, my God,
I'm not sure if you I'm not sure if you've heard this anecdote back
what?
In 1971. When the first Metro Manila Film Festival was held.
Okay.
And the rationale of that is just a 1 week exclusively screening Filipino films, right?
Mm-hmm.
On that first festival, the representative from the American Producers Association came here, Jack Valenti, and threatened the Philippine government that they will pull out businesses if the film festival proceeds. That's the kind of situation that the Philippine cinema is in right now. Same thing. It's not just a matter of we allow them. No. It's the other way around. It's just similar to how American businesses are in here. They are here on their own terms in our agreement, wherein our membership of in the United Nations amount to us trying to sign the Free Trade Act and all that. Where it puts us into this quote-unquote free competition against nations, when in reality, we are in the post-war condition wherein we can't compete. And that for decades now.
I doubt that anecdote
right
represents the current state of affairs. I don't think any, how you say, foreign businessman is that petulant. If they are, they probably wouldn't be a successful
wouldn't
businessman.
Know
Yeah.
How imperialism will act if they are in the losing side of things. That's what they did.
But here's the
what
thing,
they
they're
are
not.
doing.
We're in a state of affairs that they do not need to do that. In fact, we have a
of
lot
course.
of
Of
film
course.
Festivals that are screening, but are not threatening, quote unquote, what you call imperialism.
Yeah,
So,
because that's the point. That's the point, right? It's not threatening them. And if it's not threatening them, it's beneficial to them. If it's not threatening to them, is it beneficial to us? Definitely not. Because we don't get anything from not threatening them.
Well, at the very least, I would encourage maybe that thing that you introduced in when you started the podcast, the Cinema Realita. I would be interested in seeing like what the products of this, if you were to give them workshops, see what kind of stories they will tell. That would be,
that would have
that would be amazing.
That would have definitely.
Because
right now we are working with the transport sector, with the jeepney drivers, and they are threatening the livelihood of the jeepney drivers right now. And so if they threaten the livelihood of the jeepney drivers, I don't think there will be any more jeepney drivers or family from them that will take the workshop. It's a protracted battle.
And of course, we stand for fair modernization and no to phase out, of course. But yeah, although at least when in the guise of this competition, you say there's always room for the seeds of the undoing of the current system. You know, it's about the strategy and how we make our films. I don't know if you saw this movie, and perhaps, well, it's quite heavy-handed with the social commentary, but you know, Third World Romance, I believe it's starring Carlo Kino. It certainly pokes fun, or at the very least exposes the kind of lives that Filipinos live. Like, my God, it's about like two people who have a meet cute in a tricycle caught in the rain, and they're forced to put on refugee relief goods as a temporary clothing, you know, while they dry their clothes. So that's definitely how you say, mundane Filipino imagery. Is it a good film? You know, well, it's not the best film, but it is an attempt in trying to expose the social realities that we live today. And certainly that is a step towards the right direction in Philippine cinema. That it does, like what you said, it doesn't serve the landlords necessarily, but it allows us to confront our own social or our own conditions.
It definitely serves a landlord. It was produced by a landlord.
Can you explain to me how? Yeah.
It's produced by Star Cinema.
So how does this benefit them?
Did benefit the landlords economically, right? I mean, they sold the title to Netflix.
Ah. Well, besides that, they would allow...
Oh, no. That's the whole point of it. They're running a business.
Yeah.
That's the
whole
point. So, running
are you familiar with the second episode of Black Mirror? Wherein... Well, we're spoiling the second episode of Black Mirror, wherein this one person tried to speak out, and then he eventually became a part of the system. You know, he speaks his complaints about the system, but he became a scheduled program. Do you know that one? 20 million credits?
Yeah, I remember that. I remember that.
Yeah. So you're saying it's kind of like that. Like it shows
no.
countercultural things.
Definitely not like that. And it's definitely not a countercultural thing. From the get-go, once you saw the logo of Black Sheep, it's definitely a Star Cinema agenda.
Then tell me, what is...
They don't even ideologically, somebody, in the content of the movie, mere exposition. Right? It's mere exposition. What does it have in there? It's an ideal. I think of course we can be generous to it, like, okay, this was written by non-organized people, this was written by non-political people and all that. But what I'm saying is that since it did not put in that extra work to make sense of how workplace organization happens, it definitely doesn't start with that. And yung, kung mapapansin mo, yung inquest nung, and yung exposition nung condition came from above.
Oh.
Right? When the managers came in and accused this, that, and then accused the manager of the store, and then eventually that just opened some opportunity for the workers to open their own situations, right? It's kind of that point ideologically, that it's a reform, quote unquote, that is coming from above, definitely not from the workers themselves. And then eventually, of course, the fate of Charlie Deason's character definitely did not really progress. It's just like leaving a toxic relationship just to get into another relationship that is potentially toxic. You just don't know it. It's just your first week of work.
I suppose.
There's...
So you're saying it's exactly 20 million merits. Anyway, this is an interesting discussion, and I think that's the beauty of certain texts, that there is still room for resistance, although I would hand it to you that it's no movie can perfectly encapsulate or create a revolution, definitely not. I'd argue that's may not be necessarily the role of cinema, you know, but at the very least,
I think that's also how we approached Cinema Realita, actually. Is that definitely we're not here for the movies. Definitely we're not here for the movies. We're here to study the condition of the masses. Definitely. Cinema Realita is not an event for you. It's not an event for you to see new movies. It's not definitely an event for you to see new documentaries, but an opportunity for the audience, especially when we invite audience from the outside. It's definitely a window for the audience to converse with the community. through films, of course, to converse with the community and study their condition, study their life, and with the hope that they will be one with them in the struggle.
So you're saying you're more of an activist than a film critic. You're activist first, critic second. Or that need not be, how you say, a dichotomy. Your criticism is an activism.
I don't really want it to align with that. But I definitely want to demarcate my and, well, if it kind of happening. I'm definitely not a full-time activist, of course.
Okay.
Definitely not a full-time activist. I have a lot of respect to those who are full-time, which is why I do not really claim for myself that I am one.
Sure.
Most of the time.
Uh-huh.
I'm an organizer. I'm a cultural worker. I put it that way.
Okay.
And that it's just that I see culture from the vantage point of class struggle. For me, it's not something that I actively campaign, although there is a campaign. Whenever there is a campaign, there is a campaign. But definitely from how I write criticism, it's more of a deployment of science, the science of it, the science of history. And it just ends up with that. Ends up with the class struggle agenda. Because the logic of history points me to that.
All right.
I'm definitely won't call myself an activist.
All right.
I associate with some. I have a list. I have a lot of respect to the term. To those who are actually activists. If I call myself what I do activism, it's definitely not serving them.
Fair enough.
They're definitely not giving respect to them.
Although, by the way that you've defined that, I'm sure very few people actually do. Well, this has been a much more multidimensional and elaborate conversation that I actually expected for that. Thank you very much, Epoy Dato, author of Post-Dilawan Cinema and the Pandemic. How about any message to the listeners and maybe tell us where they can find your work? Maybe invite them to buy your book? Yeah.
Well, the first edition is available to download, although there is a lot of typo there. Definitely there is also a lot of typo here in the new edition.
Where can they find the latest edition?
I'll try to upload it.
Sure.
Later this year or early next year.
Okay.
With regards to the print edition, I'm not sure when are we going to run it out again. We're a very inconsistent group with regards to producing printed works.
Okay.
Especially book forms, because that's a lot harder to produce. But yeah, we will announce at the Facebook page of Sean and Bat Collective if ever it will be available. But definitely it will be posted online, the PDF. Well, you can also find in my website, mythiccodec.com.
My other codec.com.
Okay. Missing codec,
sorry.
It's there in the copyright page if you can find it. I'm not sure if you're aware. Post-Dilawan Cinema is my third book.
Sure.
Yeah, there is a fourth one and there is a fifth one coming.
Okay.
Yeah.
Busy writer.
The fourth one was a textbook. Actually, it's a textbook on Philippine popular culture. And well, most of them are available in Missing Codec, so you can download it there. Yeah, I don't think we've talked about MMFF, but I don't think it matters anymore.
You know what? Go ahead. Why? What about MMFF? What do you think about?
I think it's MMFF? You actually asked me about it, and you actually asked me about iti
mapupukaw. Yeah.
Iti mapupukaw.
Yeah.
Well, you know what? Whenever the industry is doing something right, I'm very positive about it.
Sure.
Definitely, MMFF is something that, especially in the volume of audiences that I've been sitting with the past few months, I definitely see a lot of people watching Shake, Rattle, and Roll. That's a positive sign that we are, or that they are making a comeback.
Yeah.
And not really just watching rom-com anymore, but you know, watching.
What does it serve the landlords?
Well, definitely, yeah. But culturally, and this is something that I really value too, of course. There's the culture angle, of course. There's
sure.
also the angle. Culturally, it's a good thing that they are definitely watching other things than romance. They are definitely watching people shooting zombies. And they are winning.
Oh, but you know, you talk about Rage, right?
Yeah. Yeah.
The third one. I love that. Well,
I love that. I love that.
Yeah.
I love that.
It's the well-executed zombie in the Philippine context.
Oh, of course, there's a lot of cliche in there, here and there.
Yeah.
But something that you've been waiting for to happen, right? Something that it's not like it's something that if you see it, alam mo yun, parang yung sinasabi palagi ni Enigma pag maganda yung laban sa flip top, di ba? Lahat tayo panalo. Ganun.
Actually,
may ganun siyang feeling
tatlo,
eh.
Yung tatlo, lahat sila quote-unquote maganda, uneven, but all of it is worth it. Yeah. Yeah.
Arguably. I,
like,
at least, di ba?
Mukbang.
At least,
yeah.
At least we have this again.
Yeah.
Definitely, culturally, at least from that cultural point, if they continue going that route, definitely something. If kasi ngayon parang it's something that my friend has been worried about. Of course, it's a growing worry within the industry that people are not watching movies because they have alternatives, starting the
streaming,
pandemic,
yeah,
streaming, YouTube, TikTok, and all that.
Yeah,
and if these kinds of movies can attract people again, of course, it's good for business. And if it's good for business, it's. I'm not saying that it's definitely good for the workers, but there's a lot of work for us again to choose from.
Sure.
Nakikita ko yung mga ano mga friend ko na umi extra na at least lumalagari sila ngayon, at least may pang noche buena sila, yung mga ganun. So there's definitely some good things that's happening. Of course, kasi ano naman eh, di ba? We're not really working within a revolutionary context. So we take what we can. I mean, doon ang gagaling yung part nung in a way optimism ko despite of definitely enraging situations that we are right now. MMFF will be a good comeback for the industry if they played it right this time. But right now, yung nagiging kalaban definitely tulad ng mga past years is always the exhibitors. Sila yung namimili ng films na pwede lang ipalabas eh. Yung may in a way may pre-selling na nangyayari kasi eh. Some
pre-selling
theaters are now deciding ano yung papalabas nila, and that's where alam mo yun, if yung mga ganitong klaseng businesses eh, pag businesses interject, diba, tapos the government does not really, alam mo yun, they regulated that eh. They left it to the businessmen. Doon talaga nagiging talo eh. Yung parang, di ba, yung matagal ng ano yan eh, matagal ng ano yan ng mga taga film industry. At least man lang, mga alam yung gobyerno dyan, di ba? Yung ma-enforce. Kahit, kahit sabihin natin, tatlong screen, okay, di ba? Parang maghati-hati lang sila sa maghapon, ganyan. Hindi, wala eh. Yun yung isa sa mga problem ngayon ng MFM. Kaya sabi ko, if they played it right, it's definitely going to be a good comeback for everyone.
Aasa ba tayo sa ano sa 31 million para ano? Huwingi kay BBM, di ba? Baka sila pa yung ano, di ba? Alyan
I'm
natin
not
dyan.
Sure. Kasi ano siya, mas mayaman pa sa kanya siya yung may-ari ng SM eh. Diba?
Ah, well.
Ganun yun eh. Yung sila yung namimili nung kung anong papalabas lang eh.
Teka,
naging
siguro,
issue
yung
dati, naging
ng
issue yun
ano,
dati,
eh.
di ba? Naging issue yun dati. 2015. Kahit na malakas
Pero,
yung nilalang sa kayong Honor Thy Father, some SM cinemas pulled them out.
Sayang, oo nga.
Tapos parang nagkaroon ng Senate inquest for that.
Ah,
may unfair play yung businesses. It's definitely something na
that was a good year also. Honor Thy Father. Oh, Eric Mati yun din, diba?
Oh, that was a good year. Pero yun nga, the businesses are...
fighting.
Are really against good cinema.
I mean, sa totoo lang, no? I mean, yung Hollywood ngayon, medyo... ano, ako man lang siya ko Wonka yung lalabas eh. So, wala masyadong in-demand na ano, Christmas tapos, event.
Yun nga, weird know? Pa yun. So, parang, yun pa yung mga theaters, yun pa yung ipipilit sa atin. Imbis na alam mo yun, baka di na lang nila pinalabas yung Godzilla.
Godzilla minus one, no?
Yung sinasabi ko na part ng Philippine cinema talaga yung theaters, and something that should be taken into consideration whenever we talk about Philippine cinema, because it affects our experiences of it.
Yeah.
And definitely it's always a part of the discussion ng MMFF, because it's definitely part of the reason why we can't experience some of the movies. Because they choose which to screen.
Like even in 2016, no, medyo kawawa yung kay Alvin Yapan, yun ata, Oro, di ba? So, that was a good year, but really anyone
hindi lang,
watched
yung
that
buong lineup, actually, hindi lang. Yung buong lineup, actually, kawawa. Kasi they were not in the provinces, di ba?
Yeah, ah, well.
Lineup. Kasi SM in the provinces and the Gaisano Malls and the whatever, the Vista Malls decided, hindi kami papalabas, Metro Manila lang yun eh.
Okay.
Ganun. Well, definitely, we should be talking about that.
Sure.
We should be talking about that.
Sana may ibang ano, may ibang episode tayo on MFF alone, no? Pero okay na to. No, thank you. Dapat, oo. Siguro ano, maybe next year. Tingnan natin. Pero siguro for recommendations, all our listeners should support MMFF at the very least to encourage, at least from the business angle, Filipino cinema and even corporate and experimental films alike. I mean, it's mixed, but at the very least, watch the good ones, maybe even the bad ones, you know? I mean, at the very least, you'll send a message and know that parang, this is what we want, this is what we want improved. So yeah, hope you enjoy this holiday season of movies, you know, and see you all next year. So thank you, Epoy Dato, you know, our author of Post Dilawan Cinema and the Pandemic. That was a very full discussion on not only of your book, but also the cinema or the surrounding ecosystem that produces the films, you know, intersection of cultural, business, economic, and political. So thank you. I hope to get you back on the podcast. Sure.
I'm just a message away.
Sure. Thank you very much. Agree. So the PI Podcast can be found on Spotify, YouTube, and Anchor. You may follow us on Facebook and send us an email for maybe comments, suggestions, and questions regarding possible future episodes on the email at pipodcastph@gmail.com. But until the next episode, magandang gabi, mga ka-PI.